happened to the life that we once knew? Can we really live without each other? Where did we lose the touch that seemed to mean so much? It always made
welcome to the Monday, May 22nd, 2017 edition of the American Awakening. I'm your host, Michael Herzog, and as always, I'll be with you for the next 3 hours. And who else, folks, would be free as a bird, but someone of whom is likely the greatest philosophical mind in the 21st century, a professor emeritus of whom has been banned from his writings on Amazon.com, an accomplishment in itself, by the way, a man who, if I read his resume, would likely take up the whole show. So I'm just going to introduce him as the man that was cordial enough to hold my hand on my very first inaugural show on KFNX here in Phoenix, Arizona, Professor Emeritus Jim Fetzer. Welcome, Jim. It's always an honor. How you doing?
Oh, Michael, you're just terrific. Just terrific. Those were such kind words. I wish I could believe them.
Well, you didn't even get to hear the song. I played the song in your honor, Free as a Bird, Jim.
Oh, you know, and I was standing by. I was told I wouldn't be on the air until after the song was played, but that's very nice, Michael. You do a great job, and I'm so glad you're back on the air.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. I've been back on now for about, I don't know, close to 2 months, and I've been meaning to have you up. You know, there's so much stuff going on here, and this is what we want to get into tonight, Jim. I mean, with all that's happening, can you believe in this political environment, in all your years of breathing air on this planet, that we are actually seeing such a thing that is happening now?
Well, there's so much that's so bizarre, that's so phony, including all these... The attack about Trump and Russia is all complete fabrication. You may have heard, Michael, but two investigative journalists followed the Clinton campaign, and they reported in a new book out now called Shattered that John Podesta and Robbie Mook, who are her senior campaign advisors, made up the Russian hacking meme within 24 hours of her concession speech. I mean, this is embarrassing beyond words. I can actually... quote from the book. The book further highlights how Clinton's Russia blame game was a plan hatched by senior campaign staffers John Podesta and Robbie Mook less than 24 hours after she conceded. Quote, that strategy had been set within 24 hours of her concession speech. Mook and Podesta assembled a communications team at the Brooklyn headquarters to engineer the case that the election wasn't entirely on the up and up. For a couple of hours, with Shake Shack containers littering the room, they went over the script they would pitch to the press and the public. Already, Russian hacking was a centerpiece of the argument. So when Trump complains, you know, about this being a witch hunt, I think it would be better if he'd said wild goose chase, because there's nothing there, Michael.
Well, Jim, let me interject something here, because this goes back to the WikiLeaks dump, which was, I believe it was shortly thereafter, the assassination, if you will, of Seth Rich, which we're going to get into, which is, by the way, folks, I want to say this is very important because this is the linchpin. This will bring it all down. But I want to ask you, Jim, back when WikiLeaks made their first dump, and if you can remember back, it was either the first or the second campaign, the first or the second debate, excuse me, when Trump had made a statement and Hillary Clinton said to him, well, I've got 17 other intelligence agencies that are denying or that have confirmed this Russian intrusion, and you're saying you don't believe 17 intelligence agencies. Do you recall that statement?
I remember all that rubbish. In fact, only three ever took a stand on it. The Coast Guard wasn't remotely involved. It was the FBI, the CIA, and the NSA who said with high confidence, which implies that it's an opinion. It wasn't a finding of fact, Michael. This was all complete and total rubbish. 17 were never involved. They offered that number because it sounded impressive. How could 17 be wrong? But it was only three, the most political of them all, where it turns out that Comey, get this, we have a new report that Comey actually hired a former British intelligence agent to dig up dirt on Trump, which Judge Napolitano, who's simply excellent and does his homework, has reported. James Comey, when he was director of the FBI, authorized his agents last year during the presidential campaign to engage a former intelligence agent to dig up dirt on candidate Trump and to pay him $50,000 for it. The story the agent dug up was so lurid and unbelievable that the FBI declined to make the payment. And this appears to be this guy, Christopher Steele, who alleged that the Russians had compromising material on Trump and that Trump campaign activity was coordinated with Russian hackers targeting Hillary. But it was all nonsense, Michael. None of this was true. And it's embarrassing that you have Congress still chasing this wild goose. I mean, there's nothing to it, nothing to it.
Well, let me interject here and finish up with what my point that I was going to make about that debate when she mentioned that is,
sir,
when that dump first came out, I went in, Jim, and I explored that in pretty elaborate detail. I mean, I missed a lot. I didn't go through 30,000 of them, but I ran across an email that Bill had sent to Hillary. And basically, it said something, and I don't want to quote it verbatim, but it said something along the lines of, use the Russian thing again, the media bought it, lock, stock, and barrel.
Yeah, well, that doesn't surprise me, Bill, who actually said many weird things on the campaign, including about Obamacare. It's crazy. You're paying twice as much for half as much. I think the Republicans could have made much more of that, just running it over and over and over again. But Bill's a sleazeball, too. We all know that.
Well, come on now, Jim. Let's give him some credit here. Okay, we don't want to get political now, do we? Look, I've done so many shows, and my audience will attest to, I just did a show here a couple weeks ago on the Clinton body count. And I'm looking at this from the context, and as we open this up further and we start looking at more and more of this Seth Rich investigation coming to light, and I put...
Michael, are you there?
Six of them in the past year that have mysteriously died or been suicided just during the campaign. We can't limit it to just Seth Rich. We also have to include Sean Lucas in there, who had filed suit against the DNC over them stealing the election or stealing the nomination from Bernie Sanders. He wound up dead. Dead 2 days after he filed the suit. And then we can't leave out John Ash, who was UN secretary. Go ahead.
Yeah, he was a UN official who accidentally crushed his own windpipe a week before he was scheduled to testify against the Clintons and the Democratic Party. Isn't that amazing? The guy's a big, strong guy. I'm looking at a photo of him here. And he crushed his own throat while exercising. And, of course, you don't want to leave out Britain's top human rights lawyer, John Jones, 48, who worked for Representative Julian Assange. He was working alongside George Clooney's wife, Amal, and he wound up in front of a subway. I mean, he was the first of this string, Michael, so there's no question about it. These people are playing hardball.
Well, okay, so we've got John Ash, and I've got an article up in front of me from Zero Hedge, which I take to be, you know, they're usually 99.9% right dead
yeah,
on.
Yeah, Zero Hedge is very good, very good.
And I pulled this up, and then I noted when I pulled it up on Google today, Jim, that Zero Hedge, accounts that John Ash indeed was going to testify just a couple days later after this mysterious accident happened. But yet when you go back and you look at Google and you look at the way CNN reports it, there was nothing said on CNN about him being called to testify. Wow. And also Snopes.com up there on the, right on the top line debunks the whole thing. So, you know, this is nothing more, as we both know, this is nothing more than the fake news, if you will, that they have contracted to get this 400-pound lady sitting on a couch with her cat, okay, to debunk anything that could come out as any semblance of truth about what's really going on. Over to you.
Well, Snopes is a government asset. I mean, it's ridiculous. I had a very good lawyer from California. I think he's recently given up his practice, but is also a professor of philosophy, who debunked Snopes attacking Sandy Hook skeptics, and also on the Boston bombing in my books on Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing, the first of which has been banned, as you observe. The other was a book I also published in 2015, and I suppose we didn't go to the moon either, which has just been wiped out, Michael, because they did a huge house cleaning on any challenging of the official narrative of the end of World War II vis-a-vis the Holocaust. So if you have done your research, if you know there were 236 references to 6 million Jews in dire straits or fear of loss of their lives before the Nuremberg Tribunal, beginning as early as 1890, if you know that the whole 6 million is derived from a disputed passage in Leviticus that has been interpreted to mean that the chosen people can return to the promised land only when they're minus 6 million who have been consumed in the flames, but appreciate that requires an interpolation because there was no word in the original Hebrew for 6 million. If you know that the International Committee of the Red Cross was going to all the camps, keeping detailed information on every death, name, age, sex, ethnicity, religion, and so forth, where they recalibrated their numbers in 1993 and concluded that the total from all the camps combined was 296,081, none of whom died from being put to death in gas chambers using Zyklon B. They don't want anyone to know that information, Michael. They think it might raise questions about the authenticity of the claims they've made.
Well, in answer to your question about my research, I'm off a little bit because my Red Cross records show 271,301. And also on the Auschwitz, the plaque on the front of Auschwitz has gone from a mysterious 4 million down to 1.1 million, 90% of which were Jews, which if you separate 3 million from 6 million, according to their mathematics, Jim, still leaves 6 million. I don't know how they arrive at that figure. But yes, I have that article where there was 236 references prior to the Nuremberg trial. So I've done my research, and I did a complete show on the Ernst Zundel trial, which I blended all of that in there just so anybody that was any kind of a skeptic would know that they blew every witness. Doug Christie, the attorney for the defense, blew every witness that the prosecution had against Ernst Zundel out at the first trial. Go ahead.
Very, very good, Michael. Good work. Now, your number, I think, was before they did the recalibration. I'm looking at it right now. But, you know, it's dramatically different than the claim to 6 million. And, you know, so what this means is all the available evidence falsifies what we're being told. Frankly, my view or attitude has always been that if the Holocaust narrative were true, then research would confirm it. And if it were false, then the world deserved to know. From everything I've been able to ascertain, it is indeed false, and the world does deserve to know.
Well, Jim, yeah, but look at all the money that they would give up in the reparations that they're getting, and also the allotment every year that we're paying to Israel. I mean, you know, they can't afford to have that come in and actually tell somebody the truth. Seriously?
I mean, come on. Yeah. You can find my reporting on the International Committee of the Red Cross in my blog entitled The Holocaust Narrative, Politics, Trump, Science, where they recalibrated 1993 with a number I was offering, 296,081. I think yours was the number they had prior to their recalibration in 1993. Okay. But, well, you know, Michael, you're very close to the mark, and it makes the same point, namely the whole business about 6 million Jews is just a fantasy.
Well, yeah, I agree. And, you know, the only issue with it is getting the word out there, because, as you know, the public at large, not my listening audience, and not yours, I'm sure, but the public at large is so mesmerized, hypnotized, and pharmaceuticalized that, you know, you try to talk to them about this for 3 or 4 minutes, and their eyes are going to glaze over, and they're going to tell you you're a nutball. And since we don't have access to the mainstream media, the only thing we can do is wake them up one mind at a time. But I want to go back here for a minute, Jim. I didn't mean to delve off into this, but as long as you brought it up.
Okay. Sure. I was explaining how they had not only banned Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, which went on sale on 22 October 2015. It sold nearly 500 copies before they banned it on 19 November. So I went on rents that night. I was coming on with Jeff, and I announced that I was releasing it for free as a PDF to the public, because this was obviously a political stunt, and you can still obtain the PDF of the original edition, the first edition, if you go to rents.com and just do a search on Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, or actually just go online and search for Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, and you'll be able to download the PDF from rents.com.
Jim, isn't Amazon owned by Jeff Bezos?
Yep, who bought the Washington Post as his political plaything.
Right.
The guy's quite a disgrace. Yeah. They hired a guy named Jay Carvey, who'd been a press spokesman for the Obama administration before he went to Amazon.com as senior vice president. And I'm sure that he and Bezos and maybe Barack himself were involved in banishing the book, because it blows the whole story out of the water. There are a dozen contributors, including 6 current or retired PhD professors, Michael, and we proved there that the school had been closed by 2008. It was loaded with asbestos and other biohazards, damaged by hurricanes. It had long since been used for storage. We had videos about it up online for at least a year before I actually edited the book, and many former teachers were saying, yes, this is exactly what they do with abandoned schools. They use them for storage. And when I published the book, one of my contributors, Dr. Eelwin, who maintains the Fellowship of the Mind's blog, had already published 80 articles on Sandy Hook. I myself had already published 30. So I was in the position to pick the best of the best out there, including some wonderful work by James Tracy, whom Lenny Posner would hound out of his position at Florida Atlantic University, where one of his areas of teaching was the media and conspiracies. So, I mean, he was doing his own research. He had an own independent blog and published a piece about Wayne Carver, the medical examiner's press conference, which was very, very strange. He didn't know how many boys, how many were girls. You know, he claimed that each suffered from 3 to 11 gunshot wounds. That's just ridiculous on its face. And even said he hoped this whole thing didn't come crashing down on Newtown.
Okay, I'll tell you what, we got to take a break here. Jim, we got a 3-minute break coming up, and then I got to do a quick shout out for the network. So hang in there. We'll be back. There's a whole lot more to come, folks. Just a plethora of information coming out of this gentleman. See you in 3. Be right back.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at libertystickers.com. Again, that's libertystickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855, the number 2, keep it today.
Hey there, quick question for you. Would you be okay with more energy, more endurance, thicker, healthier hair, a better mood, reduced appearance of wrinkles, improved sleep, improved blood pressure and cholesterol profiles, improved vision, improved memory? Okay then. Well now, have you heard of Nature's Youth RSF? It's from the anti-aging experts at naturesyouth.com. Naturesyouth.com. See, at Nature's Youth, they understand exactly what it means to provide top quality health products. And Nature's Youth customers not only improve their health, they know they're also providing their body with the right nourishment to maintain that peak performance and fight the aging process. If health, wellness, and nutrition are what you desire, choose Nature's Youth RSF. I did. You see, you're going to get older. It's just up to you how you feel when you get there. Get started today. Nature's Youth RSF. Simple to use, simple to order. Go to naturesyouth.com. That's naturesyouth.com. Naturesyouth.com.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. Now, before I get back to my special guest, Jim Fetzer, I want to remind everybody that RBN is in a pledge drive. Okay, we need to upgrade some equipment here. We need to get some bills paid. We need to kind of get John a little bit of a breathing room here so he can focus a little bit more and make some plans on how to improve this network. So I want you to pick up your telephone, call 800-724-2719, extension 3. Again, that's 800-724-2719, extension 3. Say hello to Mike. Tell him you're making a donation because Michael Herzog's still barking at you. If you don't want to do it that way, go into the website at republicbroadcasting.org. Click the PayPal button to donate. Put a little note in there that says, because Michael Herzog's barking at me again. Or you can send check, money order, or cash in tinfoil to 2251 Double Creek Drive, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Again, that's 2251 Double Creek Drive, number 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. I appreciate your donations, folks, and just tell them you're tired of hearing me bark at you and you want to get this over with just as much as I do. So, that said, getting back to my guest, Jim, this is a short segment here, just a few minutes, but I wanted to interject a little bit regarding the Sandy Hook thing before we move on. Sophie Smallstorm actually made a trip out there and investigated it for herself, came up with two astounding videos on it. You know anything about that?
Oh, sure, yeah. Sophia did this wonderful video called Sandy Hook in 2, 3, 4, and 5 Dimensions, which is just a wonderful introduction. It begins with a bus making a trip to Sandy Hook, and you're hearing a narrator who's an expert on firearms explain how the kill-to-target ratio here was phenomenal. This was supposed to be a 6-foot kid who weighed about 120 pounds and allegedly was carrying about 40 pounds of equipment. It was completely ridiculous. I used to supervise marksmanship training for recruits when I was a series commander in the Marine Corps and had 15 DIs and 300 recruits under my command in San Diego, where we do marksmanship training at Edson Range Camp Pendleton. This whole thing is just completely ridiculous. Everything claimed about it is nonsense. He didn't shoot his way into the building and then have a series of state troopers walk in through the shattered glass, which might very well have cut their uniforms. In fact, there's indication it was something the equivalent of a shotgun slug that was used to break that open. But even better, Michael, we have 50 photographs of them furnishing an empty house to be the Adam Lanza home, including having his room made up messy, room made up neat. Obviously, it was one way or the other when they found it, but they hadn't decided yet. A photograph of the Nancy Lanza bedroom, where she's supposed to have been killed. You see some red stuff on the bed, but it isn't blood. I think it might be raspberry jam. There's white forms on the wooden chest that they were keeping records of how they were organizing the rooms. And then Kelly Watt, who has her own commercial and home cleaning service, with her keen eye spotted a blue moving pad beneath the leg of the bed that they'd overlooked in their haste to get the job done. And then we have 50 more photographs of them refurbishing the school, including the moving vans, the classroom door with a moving tag on it. The classic is a photograph of the SWAT team already there. Just above the front, you can see the four windows of the classroom 10 that are undamaged. After the shooting, they'd be shot up. The flag's at full mast. You come down, there's Wayne Carver leaning against a wall with his arms folding, awaiting the arrival of his portable mortuary tent. There's crime scene up for a crime that is yet to be committed. We thought originally it was taken the morning of the 14th. It was actually taken the evening of the 13th. And we also have photos of the windows before and after of the perps drilling holes in the window frames, Michael, to simulate bullet holes, and then pink rods exactly parallel to one another and 90 degrees to the window frame to simulate fantasy shooting. This is someone who knew nothing or basically nothing about, you know, real actual firearms, faking it all. Unbelievable. Michael, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yeah, no, that was debunked long ago, and I can't have you up on the program without just touching on that. We got a break coming up here shortly, but what I want to do is I want to back up a little bit, and I want to talk a little bit more about this Trump situation, and I want to get your thoughts, Jim, on this special counsel that they're appointing, this Robert Mueller, because this happens to be the guy that was ahead of the FBI when they threw Susan Lindauer in prison for 10 months simply because she wanted to testify in front of Congress and blow the lid off George Bush's, you know, false weapons of mass destruction thing against Saddam Hussein.
I got a lot for you on Robert Mueller when we back, Mike.
All right, we'll see you in three, folks. Stick around. I'll be back on the other side with my special guest, Jim Fetzer.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
Okay, nurse, let's get this man to the ER stat.
Right away, doctor.
We see this every day. Heart attack or angina pain due to blocked and clogged arteries. Chelation can remove obstructions or blockages from arteries and help avoid painful and expensive surgery. Now there's Angioprim. It's a liquid oral chelation product that you take with juice. You start to feel the results fast. Angioprim increases blood flow all over the body, and that means more energy and strength to take on the day with less aches and pains. 60 years of research has gone into chelation. and Angioprim is the result. A safe and easy way to unblock your veins and arteries from buildup that slow circulation.
Paging Dr. Jones, please report to the emergency room right away.
Log on now for a special radio offer from Angioprim. That's angioprim.com/radio. A-N-G-I-O-P-R-I-M. Angioprim.com/radio or call 877-882-7221. That's 877-882-7221.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun with my special guest, Professor Emeritus from the University of Minnesota, James Fetzer. Jim, let's talk for a little bit about this Trump special counsel, this Joe Lieberman that they have appointed in there. He was appointed by Rod Rosenstein, right?
Yeah, you mean, of course, Robert Mueller, who was an American lawyer and civil servant who was a sixth director of the FBI, serving from September 4th, 2001 to September 4th, 2013. He was born August 7th, 1944, so his age is 72. Battles and Wars, Vietnam, education, Princeton University, University of Virginia, New York University, University of Virginia Law School, which makes us kindred spirits because I also graduated from Princeton and taught twice at the University of Virginia, once as visiting associate, then as visiting full professor. But here's a couple of key highlights of his career. He became FBI director a week before 9/11. He stepped down a little more than 5 months after the Boston Marathon bombing, and he was there when the Sandy Hook event took place about 9 months before he stepped down. So he's a past master at covering up obvious and blatant frauds.
So this is obvious the reason for his appointment. Now, this guy that's in there, the deputy director right now, is Matt McCabe.
The acting director.
Yeah, the acting director. Now, what's the story on, I guess it's his wife received $650,000 in campaign donations from Clinton
right.
Foundation.
That's right. But Terry McAfee had a role in all that in Virginia. It's quite a scandal at the time, though the press today is not reporting on it. What's crucial about this appointment, I think, is the timing. Get this, Michael. Jason Chaffetz, chairman of the United States House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform, has requested a former director of the FBI, James Comey, all of his memos while in office, including those related to the Clinton Foundation, Benghazi, the DNC, Anthony Weiner's computer, and so on, to whatever extent they exist. Chaffetz said that should Comey fail to comply and not submit every single memo during his term of office, the Oversight Committee would subpoena all of them, including one that allegedly memorializes Trump's request of Comey to quit the investigation of former National Security Advisor for 24 days, Army Lieutenant General Michael Flynn. However, Alan Dershowitz has gone on Fox Business News and explained that the scope of Mueller's investigation is restricted to criminal acts, not political ones, and that Trump has violated no criminal statutes. He added that even if Trump did ask the Russian government to help him win the election, it might be terrible politically, but there's no statute against it. It's not a crime. He cited Reagan's collusion with the Iranian government to not release the hostages until after he took office. There was no statute against that either, so it wasn't a crime. Furthermore, Dershowitz says Trump's firing of Comey is not a crime, and therefore obstruction of justice is off the table, where other legal experts have observed that if Comey didn't report criminal activity committed by Trump by trying to, you know, forestall or abandon the investigation to the Department of Justice, then that would be a crime. But here's the key deal, Michael. The Mueller being appointed by Rod Rosenstein to head up a council to investigate the alleged collusion with Russia has the primary function to serve as a vault for Comey's memos. In other words, the immediate effect of Mueller's appointment is the prevention of anyone except for his investigative staff from ever viewing the memos, even including members of Congress, only if deemed appropriate by Mueller's bosses, whoever they are, will this information ever be released. So it looks as though the key here was to conceal memos Comey would have written that could have incriminating information about former Attorney General Loretta Lynch, John and Tony Podesta, Bill and Hillary Clinton, possibly even Barack Obama, which would lead to an implosion of the government on a scale that's unimaginable. He's even suggested 100% transparency on these alleged memos would result in the personal destruction of roughly 30% of all members of the U.S. government. That's Alan Dershowitz's opinion about this. And whatever his other merits or lack thereof, he's quite a brilliant political analyst.
Okay, so if I get this straight, Mueller has only prosecutorial power in criminal acts, of which there are none, according to Dershowitz. And so, yes, in essence, they just placed him in here more to protect Comey and having to have Comey release any of his memos to make sure that the government doesn't come down. Am I right on this?
Not just Comey, but also Loretta Lynch, John and Tony Podesta, Bill and Hillary Clinton, even Barack Obama. Once Chaffetz requested them and said he'd subpoena them if they don't turn them over, that sent a shudder through the deep state. So they moved immediately to put in a master of the cover-up, Robert Mueller, into place, where he demonstrated his competence at covering things up with 9/11, for God's sake, as well as Sandy Hook and the Boston bombing. That's the bottom line, Michael.
Okay, well, speaking of shudders, there's strong rumor going on here, Jim, that there's shudders going through Washington right now because of the push on the investigation into Seth Rich's murder. And I wanted to get into some details on that because it looks like it's starting to heat up, and it looks like there's a number of members in the Democratic Party who are starting to get a little bit nervous. What's your take on that?
Oh, I think that's absolutely correct. In fact, we've even had Newt Gingrich calling the murder of Seth Rich an assassination on Fox and Friends, which is a very good sign. Here's an important development, Michael. It's a couple of paragraphs, but they're very telling. Fourth-year surgery resident here who rotated at WHC, Washington Hospital Center, last year. It won't be hard to identify me, but I feel I shouldn't stay silent. Seth Rich was shot twice with 3 total gunshot wounds, entry and exit and entry. He was taken to the OR emergency, where we performed an X-lap and found a small injury to segment 3 of the liver, which was packed, and several small bowel injuries, pretty common for gunshots to the back exiting the abdomen, which we resected about 12 centimeters of bowel and left him in discontinuity, didn't hook everything back up. with the intent of performing a washout in the morning. He did not have any major vascular injuries otherwise. I've seen dozens of worse cases than this, which survived, and nothing about his injury suggested to me that he'd sustained a fatal wound. In the meantime, he was transferred to the ICU and transfused 2 units of blood when his post-surgery crit came back at about 20. He was stable and not on any pressors, and it seemed pretty routine. About 8 hours after he arrived, however, we were swarmed by law enforcement officers, and pretty much everyone except the attending and a few nurses were kicked out of the ICU, disallowing visiting hours, normally every odd hour, 1 a.m., 3 a.m., and so forth, not something we do routinely. It was weird as hell. At turnover that morning, we were instructed not to round on the VIP that came in last night. That's exactly what the attending said, and no one except for me and another resident had any idea who he was talking about. No one here was allowed to see Seth except for my attending when he died. No code was called. I rounded on patients literally next door, but was physically blocked from checking in on him. I've never seen anything like it before. And while I can't say 100% that he was allowed to die, I don't understand why he was treated like that. Take it how you may. I'm just one low-level doc. Something's fishy, though, that's for sure. And we also know, of course, that John Podesta had put out an email back in October. I'm definitely for making an example of a suspected leaker, whether or not we have any real basis for it. I mean, these are nasty, nasty people, Michael. And I have no doubt they took out Seth Rich. In fact, it's fascinating. Even the Russian embassy, you mentioned Zero Head, one of their latest. Russian embassy implicates Hillary in tweet asking who killed Seth Rich. WikiLeaks informer Seth Rich murdered in U.S., but mainstream media so busy accusing Russian hackers to take notice. That's pretty good coming from the Russian embassy in the U.K.
Well, a couple things I want to interject here. First of all, obviously, you know, it's interesting that they're ramping up this Russian hacking thing right on the heels of any, you know, further information that comes out about Seth Rich. But I want to point something out. I was listening earlier today to another show on the network, John Stadtmiller's show, and a caller from California, Steve, is a 22-year veteran ICU nurse. And what you had just finished reading, he read, and he explained the medical terminology, and that particular quote that you read, those paragraphs, came off of a place called 4chan, which I understand is a place where anonymous people can go to vent. And he confirmed and verified, as a professional ICU nurse, that the verbiage used in those paragraphs were indeed dead on. But I want to take this a step further, Jim, because I happen to obtain a copy of the police report, and the police report and the mainstream media report's timeline does not match up. According to the reports that I received from, I believe, both Fox and CNN, Seth Rich left a bar about 1:15 a.m. on his way home, and a few minutes later was accosted, assaulted, and then shot twice. And according to the reports on mainstream media, it took all of 3 minutes for the police to get there. However, in looking at the police report by the responding officer, one of the responding officers, Jody O'Leary, the actual time that she depicts that they showed up was about, I believe it was 4:20 in the morning. Now, there's a 3-hour and 5-minute discrepancy there, Jim. And then also it goes on to say it names the other officers on the scene, which I'll get to in a minute. But it also goes on to say that he was conscious and breathing at the time, and he was pronounced by an attending physician in the hospital, which, by the way, was 3 blocks away, at 5:57 a.m., which is an hour and a half after the police report says that the officers arrived. So I'm trying to figure out what happened in those 3 hours, not to mention the fact that instead of throwing this guy in a police car and taking him 3 blocks with a gunshot wound, they took the time to rope the whole place off with their yellow tape saying crime scene and left him there. I saw a photograph of that. But also, interestingly enough, and I can't confirm this, Jim, but one of the officers, supposedly the lead officer on the scene, was a Robert Wingate Robinson. And from what I've been able to ascertain, and I can't confirm this, but I've got two different conflicting stories, one that says that this Namby Robinson is his wife, and also another one that says he's her sister, but both of which confirm that this lady was, hold on a second, let me pull it up here. this lady was Nandy Robinson. It was the deputy research director of the Democratic National Campaign Committee in Washington, D.C., which means that works with Hillary Clinton. So I don't know if you've heard anything about this or not.
She might have been there to ID him for the shooters. I mean, if she worked with him, he was, of course, the IT guy for the DNC. I mean, so maybe she was there to ID him to make sure they shot the right guy. And then they were hoping he would die in the meanwhile from lack of medical attention. So they, you know, roped the place off with crime scene tape for a real crime that had really been committed, unlike at Sandy Hook. And mm-hmm. then hoped he'd expire. And eventually they got him into the ICU. Let's see, because this fourth-year surgery resident who rotated at Washington Hospital Center doesn't say when he was brought in. So,
according to this report, there's Steve in California right now. Let me bring him on. This is the ICU nurse from, let me bring Steve, are you online with Jim and I?
Yeah, I am. I'm on.
Hey, we just finished reading that report Jim Fetzer did, and yeah. I know that you did 22 years in ICU, and you're still doing
coming up on 24, Michael. Coming up on 24.
Right. I'm sorry, I'm off by a year. I thought you said you did 23 and 1 year as an intern.
Did 23 coming up on 24 right now. Yeah.
Okay, well, Jim Fetzer, meet Steve Elkins from California,
hey,
ICU nurse.
Pleasure, Steve. I'm glad you called in. That's good.
Yeah. Okay. So, take us through this from your professional opinion, and you've read this, I'm assuming, or you heard John read it. Okay.
Yeah.
Your medical professional opinion. This was originally documented on 4chan, which is an anonymous site for people to go in as whistleblowers.
Right.
Is there anything in that that report, that those paragraphs, that doesn't make any medical sense, or does it all fit perfectly, Steve?
No, it doesn't. I'll tell you right off the bat. There's talk, was he sent to an ICU, he wasn't being monitored. Well, he was shot. First of all, any trauma ambulance service knows when you have a shooting, a GSW, gunshot wound, you take him to the nearest hospital if you have to, but normally you take him to a trauma center. He would have been in an ICU. He would have been monitored on telemetry EKG, continuous EKG. He had a very low hematocrit of only 20. Now, normally you get a boost of about 3% for every unit of packed cells, which is about 300 cc's of blood. He had a crit of 20, the last I saw was 20, and that's still in critical stage because your normal hematocrit for a male would be between 44 and 54, on an average probably 45. So he was still on the bottom. He was less than half the normal on the hematocrit. So that's critical. Now, that's oxygen carrying capacity we're talking about here. If you don't have enough circulating blood, you don't have enough hemoglobin, and you're not carrying oxygen to tissues, he would have shown signs of having some respiratory failure, some respiratory difficulty, and he would have probably needed mechanical ventilation. So a lot of these things. Also, I looked at small bowel removed, because he'd been shot in the abdomen, which is expected that he would probably had, of course, they removed some of the small bowel. He probably had several problems. Not only did he have a low blood volume, which could be critical at some stage, but he probably also had introduction of E. coli, which is in a normal flora in the bowel, and probably got into systemic circulation, and he probably was septic, we call sepsis. So he had a number of problems going on. He probably even had some organ failure. Maybe his kidneys shut down, too. I don't know that for a fact. But the numbers don't match up for somebody who's not being monitored. He should have been monitored. He should have been on EKG. This does not match up with, we just turned around and checked on him and he was dead. He didn't call a code blue. None of this matches up at all.
Well, remember, they were swarmed by law enforcement officers who kicked everyone out, and apparently they disconnected him from everything that would have sustained his life, and they were instructed not to go in. They couldn't see him. No code was even called when he died. I mean, this looks like a deliberate, you know, making him die by absence of appropriate treatment when he was in a center where he ought to have been receiving it routinely.
Looks very suspicious.
Stephen, let me interject here. Are you saying, in your professional opinion, that based upon the fact that did they not give him enough blood in the transfusion? Was that part of it?
That's part of it.
Okay.
If he didn't have enough circulating volume, he would have been in respiratory. I mean, we have protocols we kind of look at. When we do blood draws on our patients who come in for trauma, I look at my blood values. And if I see a hemoglobin of 8 and I see a hematocrit of 25 and it's a shooting victim, and they may say, well, it's not active bleeding. We went to CAT scan. We're not actively bleeding. Depends how young they are. He was 29 years old, I believe Seth Rich was.
27,
yeah. He is young. And you don't want to let somebody struggle with the respiratory issue, because the next step would be, if you just didn't take care of it the simple way, which would be give a blood transfusion to give more circulating volume, which catches more oxygen and gets it to the tissue, that's the easiest way to fix that. To cross your fingers and say, well, we hope he gets enough, he produces enough red blood cells on his own over time and he'll be fine, you wouldn't do that. You would actually transfuse him to get him to a closer normal number, not necessarily normal, but a number which would be sufficient enough for him not to have any respiratory difficulty. At a 20 hematocrit, he would have been huffing and puffing. He would have been increasing his respiratory rate to grab more oxygen because he doesn't have the circulating hemoglobin in his blood. So that's the easiest way to fix those situations. You give a transfusion, not a big deal. They pep right up. They do fine. You know, the pierced bowel, the bowel section resection, looking at areas of introducing E. coli into the general circulation and going into sepsis. I'd like to see if they put him on some big antibiotics. If they did a bowel surgery, you should have had him on ANSEF or Diflucan, a couple of those other big guns there. And, you know, there's things you just do, and I'm seeing a really sketchy picture of something that was allowed to just kind of take off. Don't worry about it. And at 27 years old, I guarantee you, I've been on enough code blues that we exhaust ourselves on youth. We'll code a young child or a teenager or even a young adult. We'll code them for 45, 50 minutes, an hour or more, continuous CPR, pressors, the whole works. We don't let 27-year-old people that are healthy, normally healthy, die. We just don't do that.
Just to confirm your observations, it was when his post-surgical crit came back at about 20 that they transfused him with the 2 units of blood. And
that's
then law enforcement officials came in and swarmed over and kicked everyone out. I mean, this is clearly an operation to make sure he would be dead, that he wouldn't come out of the hospital alive.
Okay, so if he came out of surgery and had a hematocrit of 20, and you gave him just 2 units of packed cells, you would have gone up 3% with each unit as packed cells. So you're looking at 26 hematocrit when a normal hematocrit would be about 45%. You're still way under the mark. You need a hell of a lot more blood than 2 units for 20 crit.
Okay, can I interject?
Okay. I have
a professional question for you, Steve. Is it possible, and I'm not saying this is or isn't, I'm just saying, is it possible that whoever was in charge of doing that was instructed not to?
That's a good question, because usually every ICU has the top gun is the charge nurse, the lead, and she's probably the most experienced nurse on that floor who knows everything, has been there forever. If she was told to step out of the room and not be participant to that, that's an interesting question, because normally we would say, no, this is my job, and you're not going to instruct me to leave the room and not do my job. And charge nurses are very type A personalities. You don't boss them around. You don't tell them what to do. They usually tell you what to do. So if that happened, that would be very interesting to find out if the charge nurse said, I'm out of here.
Yeah, well, unless there's a couple of spooks involved, you know, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there for everybody's, you know, mental consumption here. I'm not saying it happened or it didn't happen. I'm just saying there was something strange that happened. Jim, you want to chime in here?
No, I agree completely that this was a forcible takeover of the ICU and of this patient specifically, where no one was allowed to see Seth except for his attending when he died. No code was called. I rounded on patients literally next door, but was physically blocked from checking in on him. I've never seen anything like it before. And while I can't say 100% that he was allowed to die, I don't understand why he was treated like that. Well, I would say, based on this evidence, it's 100% that he was allowed to die. I think it was promoted. I think they disconnected him from any IV and all that, and they just watched him die.
Your thoughts, Steve?
This thing is as sketchy and iffy and mysterious as Joseph Scalia, Supreme Court Justice. This thing needs to be looked at. That chart needs to be taken and it needs to be reviewed, because something is very fishy on a 27-year-old that's supposedly not being monitored. Nobody's checking in on. Needs blood. There's so many red flags on this. It's amazing.
Go ahead. Yeah, I think you're right on top of it. Excellent.
Well, okay. Steve, I'll tell you what, I want to thank you emphatically for calling in here, because this is serious. And we all know, we're all on the same page here. This is a linchpin here. Okay, if we can bring this out and push for this, for them to go public and have the curtain come down on all their fake news facade and really find out what's going on here, this ties right in with this fake Russian hacking thing, and it just totally melts their story. Everybody agree?
Oh, yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah. All right. Thanks again for calling in, Steve. I really appreciate it. Okay.
You got it. Hey, thanks.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah,
amazing, isn't it?
Call. Yeah. Here's what Newt Gingrich said on Fox and Friends. We have
okay,
this
well,
very
wait a
straight.
Whoa. Hold that thought, okay? Because I'll tell you what, we're going to take a break here. We skipped a break. Coming up, so
got
I have
it.
To take this top of the hour break. But yeah, when we get back second hour, I want to get into what Newt Gingrich says. And here's the key, Jim: when folks like Newt Gingrich comes out, and I understand he got a lot of flack for it. Okay, but these people mainstream that are starting to come out say, you know what, something looks kind of fishy here. All right, do you think there's enough pressure that we're going to be able to break through on this?
I think it's breaking out. I think it is. I think all the signs. There's too much attention on it. You even got the Russian embassy tweeting about it.
I don't mean to laugh at the guy's death, and I really feel bad about that.
Sure,
but it's not just that. You know, it's Sean Lucas as well, for crying out loud. He filed suit against him. 2 days later, he winds up dead. They throw the suit out because he didn't dot his I's and cross his T's, and he's not there to argue the situation because he's dead, for crying out loud.
Sean Lucas and John Ash. Unbelievable.
Yeah. All right, I got the music coming up. We're going to a top of the hour break. Stick around, second hour coming up with my special guest, Jim Fetzer, folks. Be right back.
I've paid a price, and I'll keep paying.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.